Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Lewis Michael Seidman, a professor of constitutional law at Georgetown University, who served as a law clerk for U.S. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lewis Michael Seidman.
It's my pleasure to be here.
And in effect, our president is at war with the truth and at war with the law. So somebody that's particularly with a history that you have, having served for one of the great lines of liberalism, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, have you ever witnessed a situation where the commander-in-chief, the head of the country, appears to be at war with the major institutions of government like the DOJ and the FBI?
Well, actually, while I was clerking for Justice Marshall, the Watergate events were unfolding. And I remember them very clearly, and I think that's the closest analogy. But there were a number of things that, first of all, I think what Trump has done is worse. But what's more troubling, there were a number of things that were in place in Watergate that really controlled Nixon and ultimately led to his downfall that are not in place today. Including the fact that both the House and the Senate were in Democratic hands, and that Nixon had been forced to accept a attorney general and a special prosecutor who were devoted to making sure that the law was enforced. And then, of course, the fact that Nixon had had the poor judgment of taping his crimes. So things are much more dicey today than they were then, I think.
So can you give us any sense of hope or optimism here that in the lobby of the CIA they have inscribed from the Gospel of St. John, you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free? Given that there's no agreement about what is true, and that we have this peculiar situation where I think another difference between Watergate and the current situation with Special Counsel Mueller is that everything that Mueller is doing is secret and we don't know, and he's being very careful not to leak anything, whereas the Watergate hearing was seen by all. It was a massive television event. So what was happening in terms of an investigation was being revealed before our eyes. Is that a situation, since we don't know what Mueller knows and that we're speculating, that that's also an advantage that Trump has?
Well, yes. I mean, and that is related to the fact that Congress is now in Republican hands. So the Watergate Committee in Congress was tremendously important, and that happened because the Senate was controlled by the Democrats. You know, in terms of optimism, I think things are still very much up in the air. It is worth remembering also that Watergate took a very long period of time, and by those standards, we're still sort of midway through this. Ultimately, this is a question that is going to be resolved by the American people. I mean, it's going to be resolved in the November election. It's going to be resolved in the reaction to the Mueller, whatever Mueller comes up with. And we don't yet know how it's going to play out. And yes, there are some reasons for optimism. I mean, Trump's approval ratings are higher than they've been recently, but it's still the case that a solid majority of the American people don't like him and don't approve of him. And we're just going to have to see. These are very, by my lights, these are very frightening times, but we don't yet know how it's going to come out.
So one of the latest shoes to drop has been the news that Paul Manafort has been in contact with witnesses, even though he's under surveillance and is under house arrest, in effect, with an ankle bracelet. I think actually he might have two ankle bracelets. And he's facing quite a lot of jail time. It looks as though, what's your sense? There are two judges involved, but it looks as though Mueller might put him in jail.
Well, Mr. Manafort is, I think it's fair to say, in a lot of trouble. He was in a lot of trouble before this. This doesn't help him. I do think, you know, there'll be a hearing on this. He's entitled to have his side of the story heard. I don't think we should rely just on the prosecutor's filings. But that said, it's something of a mystery why Paul Manafort has not yet cracked why he is risking all of this jail time. And there were a number of possibilities. Of course, one possibility is he just doesn't know anything. I think that's kind of unlikely, but it's possible. But the more disturbing possibility is that he thinks his best shot at beating the rap is a presidential pardon. And that's not a crazy thought on his part. That may well yet be forthcoming.
Well, it's certainly pretty clear, is it not, that the president has been signaling in that direction, has he not? I mean, I can't think of any other reason for the choice of those people he's pardoned, which seem to be sort of random and grabbed out of the air. The president is not going through the officer in the DOJ that deals with pardons. And when you look at the people who've been pardoned and why they've been pardoned, there appears to be a certain pattern there, surely.
It certainly seems that way on the outside. And, of course, it's also public knowledge that the president has been curious about and gotten legal advice about his pardon authority. I think myself that pardoning people for the purpose of obstructing the investigation would be unconstitutional. That is just as much a violation of the Constitution as pardoning people because of their race, for example. But I don't know. I think he's banking on courts disagreeing with that. And again, it's something we're just going to have to see how it plays out and what the reaction of the American people and Congress will be when, as I think it's inevitably the case, this will come to a head and he will try to shut the thing down one way or another.
Well, specifically in Manafort's case, apparently he was using kind of PR firms as cutouts to communicate with his former deputy in the Ukraine, who is a former GRU colonel in Russian military intelligence. I mean, if Manafort's right-hand man in Ukraine was an ex-GRU colonel, that in itself should raise a flag. And, of course, you know, on top of that, we know that the GRU were behind the hack on the DNC and the hack on Hillary Clinton's campaign manager.
So the mantra that you hear over and over again is no collusion. Mueller has completely failed to come up with any evidence of collusion. How many times have you heard that? It's manifestly untrue. So Paul Manafort is a pretty good case in point. It's just a fact that the platform of the Republican Party was changed at the last minute, apparently at Manafort's behest, to soften their long-held position on Ukraine. That's pretty clearly an example of coercion. I'm sorry, of collusion. And by the way, you know, people who are opponents of Trump often say that Donald Trump Jr. was lying when he said the meeting was about Russian adoptions. And in some ways, that gets it exactly backwards. The problem was the meeting was partially about Russian adoptions. That is to say, what the meeting was about was trading Trump getting dirt on Hillary Clinton for changes in the Magnitsky Act, which would have, of course, changed policy about Russian adoptions. And that is collusion. That's the whole purpose of the meeting, to effect that trade.
Well, also, it's worth pointing out that the Magnitsky Act, which was put through Congress, urged on by the former biggest foreign investor in Russia, who fell afoul of Putin and had to get out of town and has been on Putin's hit list, his attorney was Magnitsky, and he was investigating the theft of state resources, in fact, tax money, that Bill Browder had paid, and they stole these characters who have connections to the very same prosecutor, by the way, that was referred to in the Trump Tower meeting as Russia's prosecutor general that they were boasting about having dirt on Hillary Clinton. These cronies of this characters were the ones that responsible for Magnitsky being beaten to death in jail, stealing $220 million, and lo and behold, the Russian judicial system went to their defense, not to Magnitsky's defense. Browder was able to get the Magnitsky Act passed, and Putin has been obsessed with undoing that. So I think you have to put that context in there, that you're really dealing with gangsterism here.
Yes. One of the problems here is that this has gotten so multifaceted and complex that it's easy to get lost in the details. And so another difficulty is that Americans just kind of get bored and glaze over. But there really are some pretty simple things that you can hang on to. And one of the simplest is that there was a meeting with the president's son, who was and other high campaign officials, the stated purpose of which was to trade off information damaging to Hillary Clinton for things that the Russian government wanted. That is collusion. It's not really all that complicated.
Well, also, the New York Times just got a 20-page document from Trump's lawyers to Mueller, and a part of that was, in effect, an admission that President Trump had dictated the response to the charges against his son vis-a-vis this Trump Tower meeting about and instructed him to say it was about adoptions, in other words, about the Magnitsky Act. And of course, the White House at the time and since have been denying that that happened, and Hope Hicks resigned as a result of that, it would seem. So there you have, I'm assuming, since Mueller's not leaking anything, that the document that the New York Times got hold of must have come from Trump's lawyers.
I really don't know where it came from.
Sure.
But the fact that Trump's lawyers themselves admitted this in the document is pretty damning, and I do wish at the daily press briefing, the press would really push a little harder about whether that is still Trump's position. That is to say, does he agree with what his people said previously, or does he agree with what his own lawyers have said? Because the two are not reconcilable.
Right. There's a commonly used word to describe that, and that is a lie. But that seems to be a word that the White House press corps don't want to embrace. And I think the Washington Post have done surveys and studies that indicate that Trump has told over 3,000 lies so far in his tenure. And it does seem that lying is becoming the first principle of his governance. So in general, you get back, don't you, to the state of the American people. If you say they're not that interested today, of course, is the midterm election primaries. It's very important out here in California to see what happens in terms of whether or not the Democrats shoot themselves in the foot or manage to get in a position to be able to knock off some of the Republican incumbents and therefore go make strides towards taking back the House. But just in the last couple of minutes, I get back to the main question, and since you are a professor of constitutional law and you've served as a law clerk for U.S. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall and have, you know, a career in the law, are you confident that in the end truth will win out?
I don't believe that history has an inevitable direction. And so, no, I'm not confident. I think that depends on what happens in the next 6 months to a year. And one thing that does seem pretty clear to me is it's a mistake to think that the law is ultimately going to rescue us, or that the rescue will come from the Supreme Court or from some interpretation of the Constitution. I think it's a mistake to count on institutions to rescue us. The courts, the press, the bureaucracy. In the end, there is only one solution to this problem, and that is mass mobilization. That is really getting people to go out and vote, to participate, and if necessary, to be out on the streets. That's what's going to save us. And I haven't given up hope, certainly, but I don't I think confidence would be the wrong word. I think we're just going to have to see what happens.
Well, Louis Michael Seidman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Louis Michael Seidman, who's a professor of constitutional law at Georgetown University School of Law. He served as a law clerk for U.S. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Alejandra Lariva-Latt. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.